You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back, one and all, to another live broadcast of the Political Cesspool radio program this Saturday evening, December the 10th. Kevin McDonald was our guest for the first hour. The last question I asked of Kevin, are his hopes for Donald Trump as high now as they were immediately after the election in light of his increasingly horrific picks for cabinet posts? Well, you heard Kevin's answer, but it's a perfect segue into our featured guest for the second hour, which is Brad Griffin, the editor of Occidental Dissent, OccidentalDissent.com. Brad, more than anyone that I know in our movement, has been dutifully documenting each of the picks that Trump has been making to positions of high power and offering background information on them, which is why I wanted Brad, especially Brad, to be on the program tonight to talk about it, because this is something I wanted to talk about on the show anyway. So certainly better to have someone who is more knowledgeable about these things, someone who's been following it a little more closely than I have, and that is Brad. Brad, welcome back to the show.
Hey, James, we got a lot to talk about, a lot.
Well, let's start unpacking it, because I'm on Occidental Dissent right now, and I'm reading about the Gary Cohn for National Economic Council.
I haven't filled out that post completely. I'm going to flesh it out later. I just had to get that up, but, I mean, wow, what a whopper.
All right, Brad, so where do we start? I think I would say I would give Trump now, I was going to say a C-minus before you came on, but yesterday would have been a C-minus. Today it's a D-minus. Hillary would have, of course, gotten a flat F. She would have gotten a zero. But save Jeff Sessions, whose selection looks increasingly like something done out of a reward for his loyalty. And again, I don't care why Sessions got tapped. I'm just glad that he was. But other than Sessions, as you've mentioned, as even Ann Coulter has mentioned, every other pick besides Sessions would have been in a Mitt Romney cabinet. Take it, Brad.
Okay. Well, James, let's back up for a minute. Let's go back to the summer when he picked. His first pick was Pence. And, you know, at the time I thought, well, this is good news. We need someone like, you know, to appeal to the Ted Cruz-type conservatives. You know, like there was a big argument about that with Richard Spencer. And Richard was totally against it. And I thought it was, you know, a good idea. You know, I thought, okay, well, we got the president, so what's it matter if, you know, you give, you know, throw the conservatives a bone, appoint someone like Pence, show that their concerns are being heard, and we need someone like that in the Midwest to help us win there with all these really social conservative, more religious conservatives who just weren't that thrilled with, you know, Trump's more secular approach. And I thought that was great. And through the, you know, through the vice presidential debate, I thought he did a, I thought Pence did a great job. But that was, you know, Trump's first pick. And, you know, I don't think, I'm not sure even Trump expected to win the election. But he had Chris Christie in charge of the transition team before all this happened. And then, like, as soon as, you know, Trump won the election, Christie was out. And Mike Pence was in. And I was like, okay, that's probably an improvement, because everyone was saying that Christie was bringing in all these Republican establishment types, all these, you know, lobbyists and office seekers and whatnot. And so, you know, I thought it was a good move. And then, you know, came Trump's second decision. Well, we're going to go through this to look at the bigger picture as it has evolved. And, you know, some assessments we made early on have changed. Okay, so he has to decide who's going to be chief of staff. And he picks Reince Priebus, who is, you know, head, you know, chairman of the RNC. And, you know, someone who had been kind of a loyalist. I wouldn't say a loyalist to Trump, as, you know, someone who didn't allow, you know, the disaffected conservatives to overthrow Trump at the convention. So, you know, we were kind of rationalized that. We were like, okay, well, you know, Trump needs to get, you know, he needs to move on his agenda. And what he'll need to do that is he'll need the cooperation of Congress. And so Reince is a buddy of Paul Ryan. And so Reince's chief of staff and managing the government, that's okay. And, you know, Bannon can sit back and look at the big picture and be the chief strategist. That's how we approached that decision when it was made. And, you know, I think we really underestimated at the time, you know, how much power that Reince Priebus was had. This is the guy who's the head of the RNC. You know, Paul Ryan's bestie, basically. And, you know, this guy's the symbol. This guy's one of the leaders of the Republican establishment. And he was being picked as chief of staff, the guy who's going to help staff the cabinet. And, you know, I think, you know, in hindsight, you know, we weren't as outraged about that as we should have been. Because what's happened is that Pence and Reince are in charge of Trump's transition team. And, you know, okay, we let that go. And I believe that the next pick was Jeff Sessions. And everybody loved that. I thought that was great. You know, I wrote a big article about it. That was great. And we're like, sure. Right on. And not just Sessions, but Flynn, too. And, you know, we didn't mind Flynn. He seemed, you know, to have his head on straight about a lot of issues and was a little controversial. And so, you know, we were expecting the cabinet to be, okay, well, they'll throw some conservatives in there. They'll throw some more guys like Sessions, especially for Department of Homeland Security. The two cabinet posts we were most interested in was the Justice Department and the Department of Homeland Security. And so, okay, well, I'm trying to picture this in my head, how this evolved. But I believe some of the next picks were, who was it? One of them was Nikki Haley.
Nikki Haley. We talked about that last week.
Ambassador. And I saw that, and I was like, okay, good. You know, I wanted her to be like, you know, my ideal was I wanted her to be picked because I wanted her to get out of South Carolina. I thought that was great. And I was hoping she would get ambassador to India. That would be a really good move.
Fitting. You know, it would have been fitting.
I didn't really care. I didn't really care that she got UN ambassador. And, you know, a lot of us looked at it like, oh, well, he's getting Nikki Haley out of South Carolina, so that's a good thing. But you got to think in hindsight, that wasn't the reasoning why she was picked. She was picked because, oh, she's a young female non-white Republican. So, like, they put her as ambassador to the UN, even though she has no foreign policy experience whatsoever, just to, like, you know, put a credential on her resume. And so that should have been a warning right there. And I'm trying to think of who else was – okay. Oh, yeah, Betsy DeVos for education. And when that name rang out, that was when, like, I first sensed that something was wrong. And it's not because
– okay. Hold on right there, Brad. We're coming up on break. Keith Alexander has just joined me in the studio. We're going to get him mic'd up. You have gotten us all the way up until last week's picks. Not too good at all, but there was still room for growth. It's gotten a lot worse since then, and we're going to unpack that more with Brad when Keith joins us right after this.
We fought. We learned. We struggled. We won. Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together.
I think that my family has always had a big influence on me for not smoking because since I was little, I was taught that smoking was wrong. And in school, from a very young age, I was taught that smoking was not acceptable.
Recent studies indicate that smoking among teens often leads to the use of alcohol and other drugs.
I think smoking, for everybody, no matter what you say, leads to other things because it just opens the door wider and wider.
Other studies have found that if you don't smoke in high school, you probably never will.
I think having faith in God is a big part in it because the way I was raised has helped, and having the faith in God while I was raised and knowing that there would always be somebody there for me has helped to avoid smoking.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
The word vigor is defined in the dictionary as health and strength in body and mind. Do you have enough health and strength in body and mind? Would you like to pursue life with passion? Would you like to know where you stand when it comes to your vigor score? That's right, there's a free scientific test you could take now that'll help you find out what your vigor score is. Then you can do things to improve that score. Did you know that? It's absolutely free, F-R-E-E free. All you got to do is get a hold of Kurt Crosby. You can do so, C-U-R-T, that's Kurt, C-U-R-T at libertyroundtable.com. Or call Kurt at 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Would you like to learn about the scientifically proven vigor test? It's free. How would you like to improve your vigor score? Again, inexpensive solutions are available now. Call Kurt Crosby at 801-669-2211 or Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor score test today.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Okay, Keith Alexander joining the program in progress. He just got to the studio. Brad Griffin, our guest. And what Brad is doing is methodically unpacking each of Trump's major picks for the cabinet, major picks for the administration. None of them good at all, except for Jeff Sessions, although until this week, we still remained cautiously optimistic that Trump would try to, stack the people around him that would have some semblance of agreement with him on the issues that he ran and won him the presidency. So far, that's not the case. But Brad, before you continue, Keith wants to say hello and ask you a quick question.
Yeah, most important thing, Brad, did you get my Christmas card finally?
I did. We got some. We're going to still have some Christmas cards ourselves.
Well, I'd sent it and had two bad addresses, so I'm glad that I finally struck fire with this. I was listening to your commentary, excellent as usual, and of course we check the Occidental Dissent every day. It's one of our links, and that's your website. Sure. Let me say this about Nikki Haley. She really concerns me because she is the ambassador, U.S. ambassador to the U.N., or proposed new ambassador to the U.N. What is the primary globalist institution in the world? The United Nations. Mm-hmm. What is one of their biggest hobby horses now, one of their biggest projects, global warming and climate change? And what are they trying to do? They're trying to find some way to hobble white nations. Mm-hmm. One of the globalist dreams is to equalize incomes throughout the world, throughout the planet, and there's a problem with that. It's called white nations. We tend to do better than the rest. One of the ways they intend to hobble us is making it more expensive and more difficult for us to get the energy that we need, which tends to be fossil fuel energy. Now, what would happen if the UN passes some type of resolution preventing us from accessing our fossil fuel resources, and Nikki Haley just accidentally on purpose forgets to cast our veto in the Security Council about it? See, that I don't think he's thought this thing through. You know, this is not the Celebrity Apprentice anymore where he can just go in and say you're fired.
I agree. In fact, let me bounce off that right there. You bring up something interesting about global warming. I don't know if you saw it, but the other day, none other than Al Gore met with Trump. And rumor has it that his daughter, Ivanka, who's one of his top advisors, is really into...
Married to a Jew.
Yeah, is really into all this climate change stuff. And, you know, she's a... I've always heard that Ivanka was a Democrat. And she's really into this climate change stuff and had Al Gore meeting with Trump. So nothing has happened on that front, but that's another cause of concern right there.
Well, the overriding concern I have about it, Brad, is this. I'm afraid that Trump, being from New York, may have a bad case of what I call John Roberts disease. Remember John Roberts, the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, who stabbed anti-liberals in the back by casting the deciding vote that allowed Obamacare to become the law. And he did it primarily, I understand, because his wife felt like a social pariah in D.C., and she wanted to go to more cocktail parties. So he had to do something to make himself more acceptable. Ann Coulter wrote an excellent article this week about what I think it's called. Let me see this thing. I brought it with me today. How the establishment will try to destroy Trump. And it reports an interview, or apparently an incident, where Trump ran into Frank Bruni, who is a famous left-wing columnist for the New York Times, and he turns to him and says, I'm going to make you write something good about me, I'm looking forward to you writing something good about me. I'm going to do something that you're going to approve of. And that's bone-chilling, you know, because that shows John Roberts' disease to the nth degree. And if he does that, he can't do anything that would please the New York Times without selling out his supporters, like us in the alt-right.
Well, look,
first and foremost.
And again, had Hillary won, it would have been an unmitigated disaster across the board every time she took an action. With Trump, you hope you will get more than that. I'm still glad Trump won because, well, a couple of reasons. Number one, there's still some hope, although that's starting to fade with these picks. I do love how Trump completely proved that the media was a paper tiger and woefully impotent. And I also like how Trump did fuel the rise of the alt-right. So there's some good takeaways from Trump, no matter how bad he may be, ultimately. And we hope that he won't be bad. But even if he is, there's some things that happened that we can grow on. Or, on the other hand, did Trump short-circuit everyone's angst? Will everyone go back to bed now and think that America is great again because Trump was elected? That is the flip side. That could be something that manifests itself that would make it actually worse than had Hillary had won. Do you see where I'm driving with that, Brad, before you get back to giving us some of the dossiers on these picks?
Oh, yeah, of course. In fact, I had written something briefly on my blog the other day. It was called, What Do Southern Nationalists Do Now? And, you know, I had in mind that, way back, I had in mind that, you know, this could happen, and I had to decide whether I was going to support Trump. And a lot of people, most Southern nationalists I know, were dead set against Trump. And I was for it. And one of the reasons I was for Trump was because, you know, it seemed to me he was, you know, selling people on populism. He was selling people on nationalism. He was spreading, he was creating all this stuff, you know, he was going out there, he was saying the right things. So I knew that, you know, even if he won and he started, you know, backtracking and betraying his supporters, as he's done a little bit, to be honest, honestly, recently, that, you know, he could be criticized on those grounds. You know, he ran as a populist and a nationalist, so all we got to do is throw his own words back at him, and we're going to have the upper hand in that argument. But as you were saying about whether, you know, I actually mentioned this on my blog, whether is everybody going to go back to sleep like they did and when Reagan was president and, you know, America's great again, and, you know, they think they've won, and then like 4 or 8 years later, the left comes back more radicalized than ever before, because he was, you know, he barely won a few of those key states: Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan by
10,000 votes. That's razor thin. That's almost a non-existent margin of victory.
It wouldn't take much to slide back the other way, and then you have a whole different ball game.
Well, let me say this. I think that the job situation is what eroded the firewall, the northern firewall that they talk about, Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, yeah. Pennsylvania. That's what those people voted for. They didn't vote for ending Obamacare. They didn't vote even about immigration. They voted about jobs. If he does not deliver those jobs, good-paying middle-class jobs, not slob jobs at $10 an hour with no benefit, then he won't get those states 4 years from now. He's got to deliver on that. That's why I think he's got this infrastructure plan waiting in the wings.
And look, if he still may, we were talking about this with Kevin McDonald, he still may just be the boss hog and whip all of these other sycophants into line. Jury's still out. He's not even taken office yet. These people haven't even been confirmed yet that we're talking about. So, look, there's still a lot of time for him to do what he campaigned on, what won him the presidency, which was immigration and trade primarily. And so he could still be everything we hoped him to be, but there's no doubt about it that these picks are concerning, and we're fair here. Hey, when he does stuff we like, we'll let it be known. When he does stuff we don't like, we're going to let that be known too. And we got a little sidetracked this segment, Brad, in conversation, which is a good thing. We only had you booked for 30 minutes. Can you spend a little bit more time with us to talk a little bit more about the picks of this week?
Yeah, we were just getting into it.
Okay. All right. As long as you have the time, because I told you 30 minutes earlier, and I don't want to keep you if you can't be kept. So stay tuned. We'll continue on with Brad. We'll get back on these picks and why they are so concerning right after this.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
With news this hour from LibertyNewsDaily.com, I'm William Grigg.
At the Nuremberg Tribunal following World War II, German physicians who had participated in the torture and abuse of prisoners were prosecuted and sentenced for war crimes. In 21st century America, physicians who collaborated in the torture of terrorism suspects go on book tours and offer policy advice. James Mitchell, a CIA contract psychologist who helped design and carry out the agency's torture program under George W. Bush, made a recent appearance at the American Enterprise Institute, a neoconservative think tank in Washington, to promote his new book, Enhanced Interrogation, Inside the Minds and Motives of the Islamic Terrorists Trying to Destroy America. During the Bush administration, Mitchell and his colleague, John Jessen, were paid $81 million to design a program to break the resistance of detainees. Many of the methods they employed were identical to those used by the Nazis and their Imperial Japanese allies to interrogate Allied POWs. The euphemism used to describe such procedures, enhanced interrogation, is a direct English translation of the German expression Verschaffte Wehrmung, which was employed in the Gestapo's official interrogation manual. Rather than serving time in prison for violations of federal law, the Uniform Code of Military Justice, and international conventions against torture, Mitchell is agitating for incoming President Donald Trump to make good on his repeated promise to resume waterboarding and worse methods of what Mitchell calls legal coercion of detainees.
If you want a win-win-win opportunity for patriots, think GiveMeLibertyFund.com. For the news the networks refuse to use, turn to LibertyNewsDaily.com. For LibertyNewsDaily.com, I'm William Grigg.
Listen, do you hear that sound? It started low, but it's getting progressively louder. Into a crescendo, even louder. Irresistible, ending in an ear-splitting blast of mass disruption. That's the sound of America's economic and political systems crashing to the ground. But we have a plan. We will be ready to restore political sanity. We will be ready to answer the call of productive America. We will restore America's industrial base and put America back to work. We will shut down political correctness and restore decency and positive media to America. We will save our Constitution, our traditional way of life, our customs, and religion. We will restore sound money and crush the debt-based system of monetary slavery. And we will end America's foreign misadventures. We are the American Freedom Party, and we have a plan. Learn more about us, theamericanfreedomparty.us. U.S.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Okay, as we mentioned at the top of this hour, Brad Griffin of OccidentalDescent.com has really done more work than anyone else in documenting the picks that Trump has made so far to fill out his administration and some background information on each of those picks. So we had worked our way up to the Betsy DeVos, which we covered a little bit last week, but take it from there, and I especially want you to cover John Kelly for DHS. I want you to cover the Department of Labor with Andy Pudzer, but you are working your way up to that point. But
yeah, okay. Well, we'll work our way up to it, and we'll go a little faster than usual here. Okay, I believe we were at Nikki Haley, and we were all excited that, okay, well, she's an ambassador, so that means she's out of South Carolina. But that really wasn't the rationale why she was picked. Okay, and then I believe it was Betsy DeVos. Now, there's nothing about that pick that contradicts what Trump said he would do on education. But it was worrisome because her and her husband, Dick DeVos, are like two of the wealthiest big-time donors in Michigan. And so that was, alarming because you wonder, Trump said he was going to, throw out all these donors who had made...
Drain the swamp.
And so he goes and he picks Betsy DeVos for education secretary. And, they were never Trump. They were Marco Rubio boosters. They said Trump was an interloper. And so she gets a cabinet pick. And so you're like, wait a minute. And then one of the next names that rolled out, which flew under the radar, which a lot of people didn't really grasp, was Tom Ricketts. And his family are the ones who own the Chicago Cubs. And these were the people who funded I believe it was Our Principles PAC, the biggest Never Trump political action committee out there. The people who, were behind the whole Never Trump movement. And this guy is picked for deputy Secretary of Commerce. And, the Ricketts family are... They were the ones who funded Scott Walker's whole campaign. And there you have it right there with DeVos and Ricketts. You're like, this is alarming because he's staffing.
Well, DeVos.
Yeah, DeVos. DeVos and Ricketts, two of the biggest donors out there in Republican circles.
And furthermore, DeVos is one of the biggest supporters of affirmative action you can imagine. She and her husband, who is an Amway heir. She was head of the Republican Party in Michigan when the Gratz and Grutter cases were before the Supreme Court, and she took the initiative of having the Republican Party say, we can't live without this wonderful affirmative action. It would be a big mistake to get rid of that. So, as far as I'm concerned, affirmative action is more important than Common Core or any of these other agenda items because I've suffered under it in my working career. And I know how bad that is for white people, generally, particularly white people that don't have big connections or a nepotism of going for them in any way.
Okay, let's pick up from DeVos and Ricketts, who, okay, here you have like two people who are big donors, never Trump types, and they're in the cabinet. So the next one that comes out, I believe, is Ben Carson for a HUD secretary, which, I didn't really like, it didn't really trouble me. I mean, it seemed like an appropriate fit. He was loyal to Trump. He was it's a hard guy to dislike. So I kind of just passed over that one. And then there was a bunch that came out the next round. Okay. Elaine Chao for transportation secretary. This woman,
Mrs. Mitch McConnell.
This is Mitch McConnell's wife who served for 8 years in George W. Bush's cabinet. And you're like, okay, drain the swamp here. Mitch McConnell's wife? Really? And then who was it? Tom Price, the congressman from Georgia, which, Trump said he was going to repeal Obamacare. And, he seems to be following through on his promise with that pick, even though you have to say, okay, here we have yet another mainstream conservative. You know, this is kind of what we expected, but they're starting to add up here. Okay, Cho. Let me think here. Who was? Okay.
Putzner on labor.
Yeah, well, that's a little bit further down the road, but I believe there were two more. Anyway, it's not occurring to me right now. Well, maybe I'll think of it again. Oh, yeah, I know what it was. It was Mnuchin for Treasury. This guy, you know, the Goldman Sachs Jewish guy who was Trump's finance campaign chairman, gets the Treasury Department. And that set off another alarm bell right there, because this was the guy who back in the summer was trying to get around to all these big donors and was saying, buy into Trump's campaign, although they didn't really do it at the time. He was kind of an unsuccessful effort. Trump raised most of his money from small donors because all the big ones.
How do you get somebody from high finance, though, Brad, that's not Jewish nowadays? You know, Wall Street has become an almost exclusively Jewish domain, at least in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, we were kind of hoping he at least would steer away from like a Goldman Sachs guy. I've been told that Mnuchin is one of his longtime cronies and friends. So maybe it wasn't what it seemed there. That, you know, he wasn't going right to this guy. Wasn't like, you know, top of the line Goldman Sachs. He was just, he'd been through there, is what I was told. Okay, and then you have to get to Mattis for defense, which, you know, I didn't really have any objection to. I mean, he seemed like he was one of the first, wasn't he? He was the second general, and after Flynn.
Anyone nicknamed Mad Dog, we can sort of get behind, at least in some capacity. But, see, I like what you're doing here, Brad. You're really methodically going through this, and this is important for the audience. This is comprehensive review thus far, and I, like you, I tried to give Trump the benefit of the doubt on each of these, and on each of these, to some extent, you could rationalize it, you could justify it to some extent, but when you put them all together as a whole,
yeah,
it starts to paint a disturbing picture, and that's before we even get up to the worst of the picks, which I know you're
about
to get to.
It's like the swamp is not being drained.
I believe we're at Wilbur Ross now for Commerce, and I don't really know much about him. I've heard he agrees with Trump on trade policy, but still, you know, this is another very prominent billionaire in the cabinet, and these are starting to add up. And, you know, conventional Republicans, billionaires, insiders, and, you know, we were still holding out hope because, you know, the big pick we wanted was Chris Kobach for Department of Homeland Security. That was the one we were all waiting for. And, you know, if he had picked Kobach for Homeland Security and Sessions for Attorney General, we would have been, okay, he's appointed a lot of conservatives, but we got what we wanted. And instead of doing that, he appointed General Kelly. And you're like, who is this? Just another general, and who doesn't really seem to have any kind of background in immigration, although he's made comments over it over the years, but certainly not no Chris Kobach. So you got to think, okay, he's at this point, you're starting to see Trump's putting people who are like, from the less perspective, it's pretty extreme, in charge of healthcare, in charge of education. But then when it came to Homeland Security, he kind of, you know, went with the safe choice, who would pass through Congress without no problem. And, you know, after that, okay, we've already discussed.
Well, here, Brad, just a moment. Let's stop on Homeland Security for just a second.
Okay.
I've heard that Chris Kobach may be the deputy secretary of Homeland Security, and that he may be in charge of Hispanic immigration in the southern border and the fence, and this other fellow, what's his name, Kelly, or is it Flynn? Which one is it? I get him confused.
This is Kelly at DHS.
Yeah, right. He's anti-Muslim and would be focused possibly on the refugee resettlement program. But, you know, the thing about Homeland Security and the border is that you don't have to pass any new laws. All of the laws are in place. They're just not being enforced. And whoever you put in charge of Homeland Security, for example, could just start making sure that the Homeland Security enforcement mechanisms and operation starts enforcing the laws. There's no you don't need the cooperation of Congress or any other branch of government to do that. And that's why it's so alarming. I thought that Chris Kobach was going to get it, but I hope he's still going to be involved in some way, because I just don't have much faith in Kelly based on some of the politically correct things he said about immigration from the South.
All right, we are working our way through this with the one and only Brad Griffin of OccidentalDissent.com. A little different interview this hour. It's just the facts, just the meat and potatoes, names and important assorted details attached to those names. We're giving you the facts here, breaking it down slowly but surely. And we're going to get to the most recent picks and let Brad offer his take on the overall picture as it stands December 10th in this next segment with Brad.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Hello everyone, James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Well, what was supposed to be 30 minutes with Brad Griffin has morphed into an hour. This is our last segment with Brad, but we thank him for spending the extra time with us as we break down this important information. You need to know these facts. You need to know what's going on. And we're going to break it down to you and be frank with you, as we always are here on the Political Cesspool. So, Brad, where were we?
Okay, we'll move through these real fast, but we're at the very end already. So when Trump picked, who was it, General Kelly for DHS, you know, we all had our own rationalization for it. And the rationalization was that, you know, Department of Homeland Security is a lot bigger than immigration, so maybe he'll put in General Kelly as, you know, the guy over, you know, the whole agency. And, you know, maybe we'll have Chris Kobach as deputy, and Kobach will be in charge of immigration. And there's still a possibility that that might happen. And if so, we'll be a lot happier than we are now.
But, or even if they just split it up with Kobach doing the southern border and Hispanic immigration and Kelly doing the Muslim immigration and the refugee resettlement program, I'd be fine with that, basically.
Okay, so that's where we were at. And literally the day after that, and I believe this, when was it? It was like 2 or 3 days ago when he picked Kelly. It was Mattis and Kelly, okay. And literally the day after that, you know, he announces that Andy Puzder is going to be in charge.
If that's not a member of the tribe, I've never heard one.
Yeah, well, that one went over. That was the most discordant note yet. And you're like, are you kidding me? And this guy, okay, he's the CEO of Hardee's and Carl's Jr. And you could not, like, if you went out in the United States, you could not, like, find a guy who's more hostile to the average working man than Andy Puzder. I mean, he said
that he does want he wants those foreigners and that cheap labor in here to work in his restaurants. He's apparently, the one thing they're ballyhooing in the mainstream media is that he is opposed to raising the minimum wage. Well, big deal. He's also opposed to sealing the border and keeping this cheap labor out of America.
Exactly, exactly. And some people are saying, oh, well, people are just mad because, you know, he's against a $15 minimum wage for fast food restaurants. Okay, I don't even agree with that myself. But this guy is, you know, much more than that. He's, you know, I want to replace all the workers with robots and illegal aliens. And he was a huge Jeb Bush supporter and was cheering. He was adamant that the Republicans needed to follow Jeb Bush's immigration policy. And in fact, I looked at it last night, and Jeb Bush was really excited and was cheering on Puzder on his Twitter account. And so that was, you know, a bad sign. And then even Breitbart wouldn't even defend that. And he knew Trump was really getting a lot of criticism across the board because, you know, people were disappointed that Kobach wasn't picked for Homeland Security. And then he follows the next day with a guy who's totally, totally out of sync with, you know, this, I'm a pro-working class populist billionaire. That whole message was just shot to the winds with Andy Puzder. And I thought, you know, there's no way that he could, he could top that. And then the news comes out a few hours ago that Trump is appointing the president of Goldman Sachs, Gary Kahn is his name. The president of Goldman Sachs is the head of the National Economic Council, which is it's the agency that coordinates the Treasury Department, the Labor Department, and the Commerce Department. So his top economic advisor is going to be the president of Goldman Sachs, who he had this big speech in West Palm Beach where he was calling out the globalist establishment and the bankers who are destroying you and robbing the working class of his jobs. And what's incredible about it is you go back in the campaign, and he was remember when he was attacking Ted Cruz because Cruz's wife was this small-time employee at the branch office of Goldman Sachs in Texas? And then he goes out and literally appoints the president of Goldman Sachs as his top economic advisor.
And furthermore, let me just say this. Look at the predominance of Jews that have been appointed. It's just incredible. It sounds like the Israeli cabinet rather than the American cabinet.
Yeah, you've got Mnuchin in charge of the Treasury, and then you got Cohn, who's going to be above him, Cohn, or however you pronounce it, above him, at the National Economic Council. And these are the two top guys he's tapping to get the economy moving again. And Mnuchin's idea of doing that is repealing all the Wall Street regulations and having a huge tax cut for the richest people in the country. And you see that, and you're like, this is not at all. I mean, he ran as a populist and a nationalist. And the cabinet, and it's not even finished yet. We've been saying it looks more like the Mitt Romney cabinet, the Ted Cruz cabinet. And before this is all over with, Mitt Romney himself could have the top cabinet position, the guy who went out on the campaign trail and said that, you know, Trump was a fraud and a con man and was the leader of the Never Trump movement. And all these people who attacked and criticized him are being given top cabinet picks, and all the people who supported them with the exception of the glaring exception of Sessions, are out in the cold. So
it's kind of crazy, you know, talking about the financial sector. Deregulation is the last thing we need. What we need is somebody to reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act so that the wolves of Wall Street, who tend to be members of the tribe, can stop raiding your 401k and all these other things that they're doing.
Brad, I had to step outside of the studio for a second. My wife text messaged me. My my son, my two-year-old son, scratched my daughter's eye, and so we have a little bit of a concern at home, but it's all right. I the only reason I bring that up is because I wasn't privy to the conversation. I stepped outside of the studio to make a phone call, and so I didn't catch everything you and Keith just said in the last couple of minutes. But what I would say is that we've certainly fallen a long way from the idea that Joe Arpaio may be put in as one of these top positions, or even Sheriff Clark would be better than a lot of these people. And so the question becomes, and even Ann Coulter has said, as I've mentioned earlier in the hour, that all of these picks, save Session, would have been in a Romney or a Bush cabinet. Breitbart, who is obviously intimately connected with Steve Bannon via Trump via Steve Bannon, writes that President-elect Donald Trump is expected to name as his labor secretary fast food executive Andy Pudzder, who stands diametrically opposed to Trump's signature issues on trade and immigration, which won him the election. So when even Breitbart can't defend your picks, you're certainly taking a turn for whatever reason. Now, this is speculative, Brad. All any of us can do is speculate. What do you think is going on with Trump in making these picks?
Well, you have to go back to the primary. And if you go back to the primary when Trump was running against Ted Cruz, you might remember that Trump kept winning the election. Well, elections, but all the Cruz people, they tried to steal the delegates. They'd go to the state conventions and try to get their own people elected. Then they would try to overthrow him at the convention, and that didn't work. But what happened was is that, you know, after Trump won the primary, he brought in all these people from Cruz's super PAC, like his campaign manager, Kellyanne Conway, who worked for Ted Cruz throughout the whole primary. You know, we were all supporting and voting for Trump, and Conway was working for Cruz. And now you look at the cabinet, and it's like you got Trump at the top, and you got Sessions, and you got Bannon in there. And pretty much across the board, it's all these Cruz people. And you hear Ted Cruz might be go to the Supreme Court. And it just seems like the Republican establishment and the Cruz crew people have weaseled their way into Trump. And it kind of reminds me of how when Reagan was elected and he picked, you know, Bush as his vice president, and then the Bushes.
Well, that was forced on him, basically.
Yeah.
That was forced on him. That was the condition that the Rockefeller Republican establishment set in order for him to get the funding he needed to run for president. Trump doesn't have that problem, but I think that this article that Ann Coulter cites in her article, How the Establishment Will Try to Destroy Trump, is perfect. There's Frank Bruni of the New York Times who wrote an article, Donald Trump's Demand for Love. He's reaching out to the establishment trying to get their validation. And, of course, if he does that, he'll be just another failed president like George H.W. Bush.
Well, Keith, you and I could explore this a little bit more in depth in the final hour tonight. We only have two more minutes left with Brad. I would remind everybody, if they're interested in following this, Brad is documenting it every day. In pretty good detail at OccidentalDissent.com. So I don't know, Brad, if Trump is just trying to recreate the conditions that he thrived in during his campaign, having everybody around him being opposed to him, and maybe he's just trying to recreate that element. But these are concerning. Do you think that there's any hope that we could realistically have, based upon these picks, that Trump's serious about doing what got him elected with regards to his positions on trade and certainly the border?
Well, my final thought on this is I would definitely, you know, I wouldn't jump to conclusions, and I would wait to see if these cabinet picks carry out his policies or not. The final thought I will leave you with is that one thing that was worrying during the campaign is that there was the rumor that, you know, Trump wanted John Kasich to be his vice president because he was going to hold all these rallies and meanwhile let the vice president run the government. And that was a rumor back then, and I didn't really put much stock into it.
Yep.
But it seems like Pence is having his way. Pence and Reince are putting together this government, and Trump's doing rallies. So I'll just leave you with that thought, that disturbing thought.
Well, we'll see. He's not taken office yet. Nothing's happened yet, but and we're still happy that the media lost. At least we can say that. But this is not good. This is not good, but
well, he got elected, but, you know, as my English grandmother used to say, well begun is half done. And now that he gets in, it's like the dog chasing the fire truck. If he catches it, what's he going to do with it? Now we're going to find out.
We're going to find out together. OccidentalDescent.com to keep up with Brad's great work. Brad, thanks for staying with us for a full hour. We'll talk to you next time, buddy.
Will do. Bye-bye.
All right, Keith and I are back right after this.
Of the political cesspool is in the can, but don't go away. There's more to come right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.